Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology, where you learn to simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Let's get started. I wanted to take just a quick moment to thank you all who continually support and listen to James Miller Lifeology. I have been so blessed and honored by your continual support. I wanted to make sure that you don't miss out on anything exciting that's happening over here. So make sure you sign up for my free newsletter at jamesmillerlifeology.com. I have a great show for you today. I'm going to help you set internal boundaries and be true to yourself. I'll also be interviewing psychologist Dr. Glenn Livingston, who shares his story of overcoming obesity. He also reviews his Amazon number one bestseller, Never Binge Again. Reprogram yourself to think like a permanently thin person, stop overeating and binge eating, and stick to the food plan of your choice. This book will transform your view on obesity and help you overcome your struggle with food. For more information about Dr. Livingston and this amazing book, please visit neverbingeagain.com. I have some exciting news. Did you know that I'm on the radio 3 times a week? You may hear me on the same station on Tuesdays at 1:30 p.m., Fridays at 9:30 a.m., and Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. You may also hear me anytime on iHeartRadio as well as on all the other major podcasting platforms, including iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and many others. Simply search for the show name, James Miller Lifeology. Are you struggling today to find your purpose? Has mediocrity set in and you can't imagine doing the same thing for the rest of your life? Are your relationships struggling or you aren't sure how to make long-lasting changes in your life? Then today, contact me, James Miller. I will help you recognize the areas in your life that are going really well, and then we'll look at the areas in which you are struggling. We will create actionable solutions to help you create long-lasting changes in your life. You don't have to do this alone. Go to my website, jamesmillerlifeology.com, and click on the page, Work with James. Fill out the form and it will be sent directly to me. Don't let another day go by without finding your way. Your change can start today. Once again, go to my website, jamesmillerlifeology.com, and click on the page, Work with James. Fill out that form to get started today. Setting internal boundaries. In previous episodes, I've discussed the importance of setting boundaries. Boundaries keep us safe. Boundaries are essentially words or actions that we portray to other people, so therefore we are safe. We're safe emotionally, physically, mentally. Many of us, if we see someone that's hurting or that are in pain, would go help them. If we see another person being belittled or shamed, we would immediately go to that person's aid. One of the difficult things, though, we don't set internal boundaries within ourselves. We say very horrible, negative things to ourselves, and for some reason, we think that's okay. One thing I always tell people to do is to really separate between your voice, who you are, your persona, the essence of who you are, and that of those negative things that try and distract us or overcome us. For example, that voice of depression, that voice of anxiety, and that voice of low self-esteem. I don't literally mean a voice you hear, but those thoughts that portray that anxiety, those thoughts that portray that depression, those thoughts that portray that low self-esteem. When you can separate between your own personal voice, that part of you that is simply you, versus those negative thoughts that are not of the core of who you are, it helps you say, wait a minute, if that's not really me, why am I listening to that? Why do I believe that voice? Why do I believe that voice of depression? Why do I believe that voice of anxiety? When you can separate between those two things, it helps you have a little bit of a distance between the emotions and the thoughts you're experiencing versus who you truly are. When you can set that internal boundary, it helps you then speak to that voice. And once again, I don't literally mean an actual voice you hear, but it helps you speak to that emotional construct, that emotional perception of how you are seeing yourself or what is overcoming you, and say, wait a minute, I'm not going to allow that into my life. I am not this depressed person. I am not this person with low self-esteem. I am not this anxious person. When you can create that separation between you and that struggle, it helps you really find that strength, because in our mind, there's no one there to set those limits but us. You remember when you were a child, you would see those cartoons of that little angel and that little devil that would be on someone's shoulders, and the person had to choose which one they would listen to. It's kind of that same type of construct. You listen to your own healthy version of yourself, or you listen to that voice that is trying to distract you or trying to push you down or trying to tell you that you're not good enough. When you can listen to that healthier version, it gives you the courage, it gives you the strength, it gives you ability to start to look at the world in a different way. Because just like you would defend those people around you, you have to find that same strength and courage to defend your own mind and your own thoughts. Because if you don't do it, unfortunately, nobody else will. So today, I really want you to slow your mind down, slow everything down and say, is that really me that's thinking these thoughts? Or is that the low self-esteem talking? Or is that this shame that's talking? Is that this depression that's talking? When you can separate between those two things, it helps you realize who you truly are as opposed to what those thoughts tell you you are. The choice is yours. Who are you going to listen to today? Did you know I have a YouTube channel? That's actually how Lifeology started. I have well over 155 episodes that I've created specifically for you. I do know that many people struggle with listening to a full 30-minute show. So these episodes are about 3 minutes long. Each episode will give you a practical tool or technique that you can practice daily to help you simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. Simply go to my website, jamesmillerlifeology.com, or go to YouTube and search for my name, James Miller Lifeology. Dr. Glenn Livingston is a psychologist you may have seen in the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, or the New York Daily News. He's researched the nature of overeating for decades and self-funded a study with 40,000 plus participants. Today, Glenn shares his personal journey out of obesity and provides practical tips to stop overeating quickly. Welcome to my show, Dr. Livingston.
Well, thank you. Please call me Glenn. I've been looking forward to this all week.
Wonderful. My listeners may not know this, but Glenn was actually one of my first interviews when I had a podcast a few years ago. So I'm so glad that he's come back to join us today to tell us about his amazing, wonderful success and to help us all stop this overeating that we tend to do. So welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. How can I help?
So this is a wonderful thing. So when I was reviewing your information, you know, you have this amazing book called Never Binge Again, Reprogram Yourself to Think Like a Permanently Thin Person, Stop Overeating and Binge Eating and Stick to the Food Plan of Your Choice. Help us understand your own journey, but also what was the information that you kind of gleaned through your 40 plus person research project?
Well, okay. So I'm a psychologist from a family of psychologists, and that was always most important to me. Mm-hmm. You know, we often joke that if something breaks in the house, nobody knows how to fix it, but we can ask it how it feels. But it's always been most important to me. And so I've always taken a psychological route to fix things. And that kind of becomes important later because this wasn't a particularly psychological route that actually wound up fixing it. Hmm. But I had a serious eating problem myself. When I was 16 or 17, I didn't think it was a problem. I thought it was a superpower. Because I'm like 6'4", I'm reasonably muscular. And back then, if I worked out for 3 hours a day, I could eat whatever I wanted to.
Like many of us when we were younger, yes.
Yeah, two pizzas, a box of donuts, you know, multiple lattes and chocolate bars. And I thought it was great. I thought it was the best thing ever. Today, you would diagnose that as exercise bulimia.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you would. But
once I was a little older and I was married, in graduate school, seeing patients, commuting, having all these responsibilities, I could barely find time to work out two or three times a week for a half an hour, you know?
Yeah.
And I started to get fat. And I couldn't stop thinking about food because I developed all these patterns and like my whole mental being was oriented around what I was going to eat next. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be sitting there with a suicidal patient or a couple after an affair, like really high risk situations where you have to be 100% present.
Yes.
And I wasn't because I was thinking about food. Mm-hmm. And that really bothered me. And so being from a New York family of psychologists and knowing some of the best doctors in the world, I went to them. I saw a lot of doctors. I went to Overeaters Anonymous. I went to psychiatrists to take medication. And I learned things and some things helped a little bit, but it basically didn't work. And I decided I was going to fund my own study because I don't have kids and I never commuted. I had two careers. Mm-hmm. I was also a marketing consultant. I actually wound up selling more than $30 million of services to big companies, including big food companies. So I knew how to do these really big studies. And so I set up a study online in the days when internet clicks were cheap. Mm-hmm. And over the course of a couple of years, I got 40,000 people to take a survey about life satisfaction and work satisfaction and, you know, different personality variables and the particular foods that they had trouble controlling themselves once they took a bite off. Mm. And I was looking for relationships. And what I found in the relationships were...
The correlation, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. I found three things. People who were struggling with chocolate tended to be lonely or brokenhearted. And that kind of jived with me because chocolate usually started my binge. I was a chocolate guy. And, you know, my marriage wasn't great at the time. And I was kind of struggling with a broken heart in a lot of ways. And people who struggled with salty, crunchy things tended to be stressed at work. And people who struggled with soft, chewy, starchy things like bagels, pasta, bread, that
pizza,
kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah. They tended to be stressed at home. And I thought that was really interesting. And so as soon as I figured out what people were struggling with, I wanted to work with them about that. And for myself, I went back and I talked to my mom because she was a therapist. And, you know, she raised me and I said, Mom, does this make sense? What is it in my history that would make me run to chocolate when I feel lonely or depressed or heartbroken? And she said, well, she got this really embarrassed look on her face. And she said, I'm really sorry, honey, but when you were a little boy and you were, you know, 1-2 years old, my dad was missing. Your grandfather, my dad was missing for 9 months. And I was really depressed about it.
Oh my gosh.
And my husband, your dad, was a captain in the army and they were threatening to take him to Vietnam. And I was just depressed and overwhelmed. And I didn't have it within me to make you food all the time or hold you and cuddle you or play with you. And so what I did is I got a big bottle of Bosco chocolate syrup and I put it on the floor in the refrigerator and I'd say, go get your Bosco. Mm. And when you come crying to me and you were upset, right? So I would like go and suck on the chocolate bottle and go into a sugar coma. And I thought to myself, wow, I couldn't have had a stronger blueprint.
Exactly. Wow. This is amazing.
So you'd think that would solve the problem, right?
Yeah. But knowledge is power. So therefore, I know this, now it's done.
But it didn't.
Yeah.
It didn't. It made me more compassionate towards my mom. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I had the conversation. It made me more forgiving of myself. I understood where it came from.
Sure.
But the problem is that once the match is struck, once the fire is lit, and this was definitely the match that lit the fire has a life all of its own. Because a lot of the things that we get addicted to, they're like these hyper-palatable artificial concentrations of starch and sugar and oil and fat and excitotoxins and sodium. And evolution didn't really prepare us to deal with that level of pleasure. It's like we've short-circuited the pleasure center of the brain. Mm-hmm. And so the fire is raging and you have to put out the fire. You don't really need to be a detective. You need to be a fireman. So around that time, I was also looking for alternatives to Overeaters Anonymous. And I ran across a guy named Jack Trimpe from Rational Recovery and rational.org. And he was saying basically that the problem in addiction isn't one of not loving ourselves enough. It's one of not dominating our lizard brains effectively. So you're not supposed to nurture your inner wounded child back to health. What you really need to do is be like an alpha wolf and take control of this thing that you really need to capture and cage and, you know, kind of say, look, step out of line and I'll kill you.
Wow, it's a completely different approach than we've heard before. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is the embarrassing part for me. I decided that in order to do this, I was going to decide that my lizard brain, which is what is targeted with addiction, that, that was going to be my pig. That was going to be my inner pig. And I was going to make clear lines in the sand like I will never have chocolate on a weekday again. And if I heard a voice that wanted to have chocolate on the weekday, like saying, hey, Glenn, you know, chocolate comes from a cocoa bean and a cocoa bean grows on a plant and therefore chocolate's a vegetable.
It's a vegetable, clearly.
if I heard something like that, that was going to be pig squeal. Mm. And my pig was squealing for pig slop. The chocolate itself was pig slop. And I don't eat pig slop and I don't let farm animals tell me what to do.
That's right.
And, you know, after all these decades of suffering, and I really suffered. I mean, there's nothing that anybody has done with food that I haven't done with food. Mm-hmm. Eating way past the point of pain and pleasure.
Yes.
You know, eating from the floor, stealing my roommate's food, going to 7 different drive-thrus to be sure that nobody knew how much I was eating overall. Mm-hmm. Nothing that if anybody out there is feeling ashamed, there's, you know, come talk to me. you won't feel ashamed.
But you know, so I can stop everyone. I really want to normalize that because I know there's so many people who can really relate with what you're saying. You know, they may hear this and be like, oh my gosh, there's someone else who's experienced this. I think there is so much shame that's often linked with overeating or some type of addiction. And with that, we often feel as if we're alone. So thank you for being transparent with us because, like I said, many people are really connecting with you right now because they have experienced this before as well.
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at formerly obese people, you can still see the shame on their face. Mm-hmm. Anybody who was formerly obese will recognize the look on my face from having carried that around for so long.
Yeah.
You know, and I only lost about 60 pounds. If I if I'd known how important it was or what a badge of honor it was going to be, I would have gained more weight first.
That's funny.
But yeah, we do tend to carry some shame around with us, and it's a sad thing because mm-hmm. a lot of it is not really caused by a weakness of character. A lot of it is caused by what's going on in society.
Yes, exactly. There's definitely a correlation with that. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to this thing with you saying you quantified or you named it this the amygdala, that lizard part of our brain. You named it your pig, that part that was that would squeal or that would speak to you, that would entice you. How did you continually capture that? What are some specific techniques that you use to really say, no, I'm not going to do that? And that alpha wolf or alpha male part of you came out to really stop that voice.
Yeah. Well, the most important thing was to have very clear rules as opposed to guidelines, which made it easy to hear when that voice was talking versus when it was me that was talking. Because mm-hmm. what I discovered is that most people's rationalizations aren't quite as fancy as chocolate is a vegetable. Most of them are more believable than that. Mm-hmm. A little won't hurt. You can start again tomorrow. We already blew it today, so let's just go to town. A lot of things are a lot more, they sound a lot more appealing. And so I had to have very, very specific rules. And this isn't a culture that tells you to have guidelines and not rules. This isn't a mm-hmm. culture that tells you to, you know, eat when you're hungry and stop when you're full, which is a good idea. It's a good North Star to shoot for. But the problem with that is that all the research coming out suggests that willpower isn't really a black and white thing that you either have or you don't, or a switch that you turn on or off. It's more like gas in the tank that you wear down over the day. And what wears it down are decisions. So there are only so many good decisions you can make over the course of the day. And that's why so many people blow it at night after they've been good all day.
Sure, that makes sense.
And what I discovered was that if you made rules as opposed to guidelines, that then you didn't have to make those decisions every time you were faced with a chocolate bar at Starbucks, right?
So a hard and fast rule as opposed to, this makes sense, or depending on how I feel, or something that line can easily be moved in the sand.
Yeah, and the criteria for that is, if 10 people followed you around all day, would they all agree whether you follow this rule or not? Mm. If you were, are you a psychologist, James? I seem to think you're a psychologist.
Yes, psychotherapist, yes.
Yeah. So you probably studied operational definitions mm-hmm. in school, right?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you want to come up with an operational definition that everybody would agree on, you know, did this guy follow it or not? So I will never have chocolate on a weekday again, or I won't have pretzels outside of a Major League Baseball game. Those types of things are rules you could follow 100% and everybody would agree whether you yes. did or you didn't. Yeah.
Easily quantifiable, easily measurable.
And then there are no decisions. And really, really what you're doing is you are building character when you do that. What you're really doing when you say, I'll never have chocolate on a weekday again, is you're saying, I am becoming the kind of person who doesn't eat chocolate during the week. Or I am the kind of person that doesn't eat chocolate during the week. That's important because character trumps willpower. If you walk into a diner and there's a $20 bill on the table, and the waitress says, I'll be right back, I just have to get some menus for you. And she didn't see the $20 bill for her tip yet. And there's nobody at the counter, there's no window, nobody would see if you took the $20 bill. Most people I ask about what they do in that situation says, it doesn't require any willpower mm-hmm. to not take that. And why? Because they're not a thief, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They've made a decision about the kind of person they're going to be, and there are certain pleasures, and it would be pleasurable to have $20 as opposed to leaving it on the table. There are certain pleasures that they won't engage in because of the kind of person that they are, even if they'd never get caught. And I say, well, why can't you do that with food too? And that turns out to be one of the most practical things. If you
that is practical.
And for everybody listening, the way to implement that is to ask yourself, what's the single most troublesome food trigger or food behavior that you have? And how could you make one rule that would define the kind of person you want to be going forward, that's different from the kind of person you were before, that everybody would agree whether you followed or not? And then you declare yourself 100% confident that you can do that, and you just listen for your inner pig, or you don't have to call it a pig, you sure. can call it your slacker or Real pigs in the world are very nice animals, by the way. I don't want people to be mean to real pigs, but your inner pig, course, don't have any mercy for your inner pig. And you listen for it to squeal to try to convince you otherwise. And what that does is it makes all your decisions in advance, and it allows you to purge the doubt and insecurity from your mind so you can focus all the energy on the goal. If you happen to make a mistake, you just get up and do it again.
Sure. Well, and I like the fact that it's also just the proactive stance you create as well, that if you know that at night you typically go from a hard and fast rule to a guideline, well, how do you prepare for that? You know, so I think I like hearing the proactive stance of that as well, as if you know historically you get triggered at certain times, how do you prepare to listen for that pig voice, if you will? And what do you do with that? I also like how you've really redefined the character of a person. When you can really conceptualize who you want to be, how you want to be, and then does my binging part of that, or that part of me that engages in behaviors that I don't feel is consistent with my character, I really like how you use a different spin on that, because that is much more powerful. That is much more prevalent, as opposed to, you know, I can have chocolate now again, or I can have this pizza now and again. Like how you move it to the essence of somebody as opposed to a behavior of somebody, because it does have more weight, more power that goes along with it.
And Sartre said that we can remake ourselves. We have the decision to remake ourselves every morning that we get up. Mm-hmm. There is nothing that says just because you were a certain way up until this point in your life that you have to be that way the rest of your life. Wayne Dyer said, if you're in a boat and the wake behind you extends for miles and miles in one direction, that has no impact whatsoever on your ability to turn the wheel.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah.
That really is. With this book that you've written, how has it really transformed the lives of the people who've read it?
I mean, if you look on Amazon, we have over 1,200 reviews at this point.
Oh my gosh, and
yeah, well, it's been the number one book for eating disorders and weight loss and weight maintenance on the Kindle side. The book is free for the Kindle. I'll tell you where to get it in a little bit.
Okay.
For about 80% of the people that use it, they say that it transforms their paradigm and how they feel about their ability to control themselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our culture promotes the notion of powerlessness over your impulses and a certain type of hopeless resignation and the need for accountability. But this is a whole different paradigm. This is cultivating confidence and power and enthusiasm and hope. Mm-hmm. And if people will make that one rule and work on it, and we have all kinds of examples I can send them to, then, you know, you really can recover. You can recover that excitement about life and get over that, you know, resigned inability to focus and take control of this eating thing once and for all.
Well, because it won't really permeate your mind. Just like, for example, you were saying when you were working before, that would sideline you. You would think about these things and you weren't as present as you were before. So it really helps you enjoy life, to be present in everything you do, because your mind isn't going to be permeated by this binge eating.
See, that's something a psychologist would recognize. That's great. James, the reason that works is that the mental obsession is driven by the need to constantly make decisions about food. If you're going by a guideline that says, I avoid chocolate 90% of the time, but 10% of the time I let me have it. Well, but the problem is that every time you're in front of a chocolate bar, you have to ask yourself, is that one of the 90% or the 10%?
Yes.
And then you have to dedicate mental energy to deciding. And that's where the obsession comes from.
Yes.
When you've made decisions, and I'm not talking about making a decision for every area of your life. I'm talking about like a city traffic planner would assess the city, figure out where the most dangerous intersections are, and get a traffic light there right away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about just making your danger spots safe so that you don't have to be making decisions about them all day long. And you can have more presence of mind to, you know, hug your kids and get outside and enjoy things and, you know, smell the roses and enjoy life again. So, yeah.
Well, I think going back to that thing of when you have to make a choice with a guideline, it's going to be swayed by how you feel. And if I'm feeling sad, lonely, depressed, stressed, whatever those feelings are, that energy level is going to come from an emotional standpoint as opposed to a quote unquote logical standpoint. A logical aspect is, no, I'm not going to have it. The emotional standpoint is, I'm really lonely right now. I'm really stressed. I'm whatever it is. So therefore, yeah, of course, let me engage in this comfort activity. So I like that you have that guideline, or excuse me, that you have that hard and fast rule. I don't eat chocolate during the weekdays. I don't eat chocolate, you know, only this other time. And so when you have that, I do like that, that there is no energy that goes beyond. That's the rule. The rule doesn't change.
Yeah.
I really like that. That's very, very practical. And I think it really going to inspire a lot of my listeners as well to really use that hard and fast rule.
You know, you can make positive rules also. It doesn't have to just be things you're running away from. It could be, I'll always start my day with 2 big glasses of water, or I always have 6 servings of fruit and vegetables every day, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I like that. Yeah, it definitely is. Once again, these are practical tools and techniques that people can really help to transform their life. We only have a couple more seconds, but you were saying that there's ways in which people can find this book on Kindle as well?
What I want you all to do is go to neverbingeagain.com and click the big red free reader bonus button. And when you do that, you're going to get a whole bunch of food plan templates. You see a whole bunch of examples of rules that might work. More importantly, I've recorded a whole bunch of actual coaching sessions. This sounds like a weird theory in the abstract, but when you hear people going through it and you hear the hope and enthusiasm in their voice and see how compassionate it really is, you'll be much more likely to get benefit from it. So I recorded a bunch of those sessions. We'll give those to you. And I have also, what the heck else did I did? There's something else, but I can't remember what it is because we're rushing. Sure. Neverbingeagain.com, click the big free red reader bonus. You'll get a free copy of the book in electronic form at Kindle, Nook, or PDF. You'll get the free food templates and you'll get the recorded sessions. That's what's there for you.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Glenn Livingston, thank you so much for joining with us today. Once again, it was an absolute pleasure getting to speak with you again. And thank you once again for your wisdom. I know this is very liberating for many of my listeners. So thank you once again.
Thanks, James. I hope so. Thanks.
I also want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in today. Please subscribe to this radio show through whichever portal you joined with us today, or please go to my website where you may sign up for my free newsletter, watch my YouTube episodes, read the articles I've written specifically for you, or you may enroll in the Lifeology Academy where you can take self-directed courses which will help you simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. If you'd like to personally work with me, be a guest on, or advertise in this show, simply visit jamesmillerlifeology.com. Be sure to follow me on all social media platforms under the name James Miller Lifeology, except for Twitter, which is James M. Lifeology. Once again, thank you so much for your support, and I'll talk to you soon.